The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, joining me in studio, Lieutenant Yulia Mikitenko, a remarkable commander of a drone attack and reconnaissance unit on the front lines of the Russo-Ukrainian war, and journalist and author Lara Marlow, who has chronicled Yulia's incredible story in a new biography, which is called How Good It Is I Have No Fear of Dying. And together they're going to share insights into the life of a soldier in the conflict, the challenges faced by women in the military, and the power and resilience and courage in the face of adversity. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
Can I ask you how you came across each other at the beginning?
I was in Ukraine in August of 2023 on a mission for the Irish Times. I was reporting a story about women in the Ukrainian military. There are 60,000 of them, of whom at least 5,000 in the combat zones. Well, Yulia says there's 10,000 of them. A women's veteran organization called Veteranka put me in touch with Yulia. She was on the front line in Donbass. I was in Kyiv, and we did our first remote interview. And when this young woman came on the computer screen, and she was lovely, and she was calm and collected, and she smiled, and she told me her amazing story, and I was just amazed. I was absolutely blown away by her. I interviewed a half dozen Ukrainian women soldiers, but she left this very deep impression. And a few weeks later, I just had an inspiration. I had to write a book about Yulia.
Mm. Now, just to put it in context, you are only a few days from being on the front line. When did you last serve with your unit?
It was like a week and a half, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, right. I arrived to Warsaw in 20. I don't remember.
Okay, about 10 days you were being shelled.
Yeah,
10
like,
days ago.
Yeah, like
explain 10 days. To our listeners, if you would, the kind of work that you do on the front line.
So my unit is based in Donetsk region, and we are making reconnaissance with drones. I have drones like Mavics, I mean small drones for a short distance reconnaissance.
Yeah.
And also I have UAVs with the wings, like 20 plus kilometers reconnaissance to do reconnaissance.
Distant reconnaissance.
Yeah.
You also can have drones which will be, if you like, suicide drones that will carry a weapon.
Yes. It's FPV drones. It's first personal view drones. When pilot puts some glasses and he see a picture like he's like in the moment. And also we have big agro drones. They're supposed to use in agricultural to seeds, but we use them to also to drop,
You don't drop seeds. You drop ordnance
yeah.
on top of the enemy. Now, this is a kind of a high-tech war in the sense that
absolutely.
You are determined to protect the men and women of, it's mostly men you are commanding, I think, isn't it?
Yes, mostly
men. So you're protecting their lives by using technology.
Yeah.
But the Russians will maybe shell your positions, which means when you put up a drone, they can try to reverse engineer where you are. And then target you.
They're doing that all the time. And for now, pilots like target number one for Russians. And for now, I'm just collecting information about the enemy, and also I'm observing how they intense shell our positions. If they are too intense, I have to move my positions like a backwards or whatever. So it's like a very dynamic war, because you have to move all the time.
Now, you make the point in the book that the Russians don't mind losing men.
Yes.
Because and they send their most disposable men into battle.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Whereas your intention always to try to protect your men.
Of course.
Keep them out of harm's
way. Yeah, this is the one reason why I'm very fond of technologicals at war. I started in 2017. I was one of the first who actually made like a small unit who used drones and used UAVs in that war, I mean, more stable war. In one of the reasons it was to preserve people from doing such work that could be done with drones.
Now, when the Russian invasion, the full invasion happened, and they were heading for Kyiv, you had already had military service behind you, but you'd left the military.
Yes.
And because of two tragedies in your life, really.
From the one side and from another side. Actually, I didn't plan to be a military. I wanted to be a civilian. I wanted to be an interpreter and doing some research in Ukrainian literature and whatever literature. I just decided to live like a normal life, be a little bit to be a civilian.
But you had been married and you lost your husband.
Yes.
And you also lost your father, who was a military man. When the invasion then happened, you said to your mother, take me to the enlistment center. I want to go back to fight.
Yes. Yes. It was a little bit natural. I mean, I had some skills which I can use to protect my family and my country. Very normal decision to rejoin the army, because a lot of people who haven't served in the army, they also joined. So it would be like a weird for me to not rejoin.
Now, number of women in the military, were they trying to designate them to non-combat positions?
They used to. But for now, there are a lot of units which are actually very free and open-minded to women in their units. Of course, you need to struggle with some sort of prejudices. But anyway, it's become more normal than it was, for example, in 2016 when I joined the army.
But there's no question, and Larry, you've written earlier in the book about the aftermath of Bucha and what Yulia saw. I mean, if a female soldier is to be captured by the Russian forces, I suspect your life would not be pleasant under the Russian...
The Russians have raped many, many women. We don't know exactly how many. And I think that's Yulia's greatest fear, is to be captured, she said. Actually, she said last week that... her second greatest fear is to be killed while she's going to the toilet, because they have no flush toilets in her position in Donbass. So the soldiers have to go outside and drone, because they see each other all the time.
Yeah.
That's when soldiers are particularly vulnerable at that point. But yes, rape. Her mother is a psychotherapist, and she has treated many Ukrainian women who have been raped by Russian soldiers. And
her advice to you, Yulia, was if you would want to die rather than be captured by the Russians, and your mother saying, no, Yulia, you've got to come back and we can treat you, we can help you get over the experience. I mean, that's a very difficult.
And she actually gave me some particular advices. Yeah, maybe Laura can
It's pretty disgusting, Pat, but she said she's learned this from her patients. The only way to prevent yourself being raped is to stop all hygiene. Don't comb your hair, don't brush your teeth, and smear excrement all over your body so that you smell disgusting.
And
this is
alone.
This is what Ukrainian women prisoners do to avoid being raped.
Now, going back to the broader conflict, you grew up speaking Russian.
Yes.
And now you are absolutely emphatic in your support of Ukraine and everything Ukrainian.
Yes.
What happened?
I entered the oldest in the Eastern Europe university. It's Kyiv Mohyla University, and it has very pro-Ukrainian environment, extremely. And I entered Ukrainian philology, Ukrainian humanities. So it was. It would be quite weird if I studied in Ukrainian humanities and speak Russian.
Now, during the war, there have been many challenges and many disappointments, but then there have been moments of joy, I think, for Ukrainians. For example, when the Moskva was targeted and they sank the Moskva. I mean, these moments are rare enough, I suppose.
Very rare, unfortunately.
But they're important.
Yes, of course, of course. It's quite hard to be on a high level of motivation when the army hasn't a lot of victories. I mean, some significant victories. So there are two points how we are trying to motivate ourselves. We have some small rejoices, for example, the birth of a child to one of our comrades, or marriage, also when some our house pets are born some new lives.
Actually, but these are the small things, and then the occasional big thing when Ukraine manages to hit a target inside Russia.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It was very delightful, I think.
How do you see the whole thing unfolding? Because you mention in the book that in Luhansk and Donetsk, part of the time when you were there, there were people who regarded you as occupiers of their own country. You know, they treated you as you would treat the Russians, that you were the people who were coming because they spoke Russian and they had a Russian heritage. That must have been very difficult.
Actually, it's one of the things which really a little bit frustrate me, because most all of my service was spent in such regions. I mean, I haven't seen like rejoice like it was in Kherson when our Ukrainian army came to Kherson, and a lot of people were celebrating that moment. Also, when our militaries came to Kharkiv and to liberate Kharkiv region, and also came in Bucha. So sometimes it's a little bit frustrate me, but I think that Donetsk region and Luhansk region is Ukrainian territory. And I pay more attention to those people who are actually happy to be Ukrainians. Yes, I don't make some researchers, but there are also a lot of them, and I really care about them, and I will protect them, even there will be less of them.
Lara, Yulia's on the front line doing what so many Ukrainians have decided to do, and I think we can understand the motivation of Ukrainians who are so determined to fight back against an enemy that is so much larger than it. How do you see the conflict resolving?
I think a lot will depend on the US election on November 5th. I think there's a consensus now, and I hear this as well from Yulia, that Ukraine will not get back the 20% of its territory that Russia occupies, at least not in the near future. Yulia says, well, the Soviet Union occupied Ukraine for most of the 20th century, and we got our country back.
Yeah.
East Germany was returned to German sovereignty. So it could Russians, happen in the very, very distant future.
The Russians still are part of Finland that they took.
Yes. They've got 20% of Georgia, 20% of Finland, 20% of Ukraine. They like gobbling up other people's territory. But I think that both sides are reaching a point of extreme fatigue. And Zelensky predicts that there will be some kind of agreement in 2025. Yulia certainly hopes that is the case as well. I think we all hope that that's the case, but none of us have a crystal ball.
How do you rate the performance of Vladimir Zelensky? Do you think he is doing a very good job as wartime leader?
I think yes. Yeah, sometimes I watch his speeches, and I think that he does everything that in his power. And yeah, I clearly support him.
We always thought at the beginning he was an unlikely president, you know, being a comedian and an actor, but he has certainly risen to the challenge that has been thrown at him.
Yeah, I think that he's doing his best.
Well, the book is absolutely marvelous. It gives us a first-person account of what it's like to be Ukrainian under the maw of Putin's Russia and what it's like to fight on the front line, brilliantly told by Yulia to Lara Marlow, who's brilliantly written it. It's called How Good It Is to Have, It Is I Have No Fear of Dying. And it's accompanied by a glossary of terms, and there are so many, and a map of all the war zones. It's published by Head and Zeus. It's an Apollo book. And both of you, thank you very much, Julia and Lara. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.